Up next, how many people do you spot on the train or the doctor's office, in line at the supermarket, staring zombie-like at their smartphones? You edge in for a closer look, and yep, it's Candy Crush again. Great game, but is this really the future we want? So hooked up to our technology that we forget to pay attention to others? My next guest is trying to leverage technology to do the impossible, to make us more social, to get us to interact with more people, and to feel better, too. Catherine Isbister is a research director at the Game Innovation Lab at New York University in Brooklyn. She joins us here in our New York studios today. Welcome back to Science Friday.
Thank you so much.
There's so much I want to talk to you about, but very quickly before we get to our first break, you've got a project called Pixel Motion. Tell me about that.
So Pixel Motion is exploring the idea that maybe these surveillance cameras that are around us all over the place could actually be used as a public utility instead of a sort of Big Brother thing. So what we did was we built a game that uses the feed from the camera and some amazing motion flow software we got from Bell Labs and a big display screen. And we use the camera feed to let people play and interact with one another towards getting them to collaborate.
So the camera feed, like the ones that are spying on us all over the place. So what sort of game is this?
Right. So it's a pretty simple game. Basically, what you do is you run around in front of the camera and you rub pixels off of the surface of the video stream of yourselves. So we all know when you walk past a mirror and you catch a glimpse of yourself, it's very appealing. So what we've done is leverage that. And we actually have it installed at the Liberty Science Center in New Jersey in a hallway where lots of kids and parents pass through. And what happens is fascinating. Once people see the video stream, they all start running around like crazy with each other. And in the end, you can't tell who's in what group. Basically.
Well, if you would play Pixel Motion, give us a call, 844-SCI-TALK, 844-724-8255. We're going to be talking more with Catherine Isbister about ways we can use technology to, I don't know, interact a little bit more with each other, not just our phones. We'll be right back after the short break. This is Science Friday, and I'm John Dankosky. We're talking this hour about gaming, innovation, the future of technology with my guest, Catherine Isbister. She's research director at the Game Innovation Lab at New York University in Brooklyn. She joins us in our New York studios today. You can call us 844-724-8255. We were talking about this Pixel Motion project, and I'm imagining a whole bunch of people out of doors playing with one another, but sort of on a video screen, too. It sounds kind of, I don't know, on a city street, dangerous.
Well, you wouldn't want to play this game in a city street, that's for sure. But what we're thinking more is, you know, in New York City, you have a lot of these cameras. Some of them you have access to on the internet that are placed pretty high up in public squares and such where there aren't a lot of cars. And the idea is really to get people to, as you mentioned earlier, instead of staring at little screens they're carrying in their pockets, to start playing games with one another and become more aware of the incredible resource they have and other people right standing right next to them.
Well, talk a bit more about that. Why does that fascinate you so much? Because it seems as though technology is moving us more and more toward just paying attention to not just a screen, but then also to ourselves. And you see people bouncing around the streets of New York almost off of each other, not paying any attention. Why does this idea of changing that dynamic fascinate you so much?
Well, see, I actually think that we made a big leap forward with social media. We've got people, what they're doing is they're texting to people who they love, who just don't happen to be beside them. And I think what we need to do is recreate community between people who are actually in the same physical space. Now, I think that our tech is accidentally designed to privilege one person using one device and focusing really hard on it. And I think, though, now we have these cameras, we have sensors, we have all kinds of really interesting tech that we could use to augment social experience right in the here and now. I just think we have to catch up to the possibility space.
What I also like about this idea of this collaborative game is the ability to activate a dead space. So many downtowns have these big open thoroughfares that were, I guess, meant to be gathering spaces, but nobody gathers there. Now you could play a gigantic game and actually draw people together.
Absolutely. And we already have events in New York City like the Come Out and Play Festival where we do this periodically. But our idea is to create a platform and hopefully get the buy-in from the folks who are maintaining these cameras to allow people to start to create interesting interactions. And one reason I think this could happen is because everyone's paying to maintain surveillance cameras they almost never use the footage from. But if we all start playing games, then maybe everybody's happy to pay a little bit so we can all play together.
Is it easy for developers to tap into these video feeds?
You know, some of them are already online. It used to be these cameras had closed circuit technology, but most of them are actually given IP addresses, which means that if the person who's running the camera opens the feed anybody could use it theoretically. So it's technologically possible. It's more just a matter of permissions.
Are you worried in this age of NSA spying that it's just one more way for people to spy on us all the time? Now we're trying to play a game and the government's watching us.
Well, I mean, at some level, you can't control what's going on with those streams anyway, so we might as well make use of them ourselves, right?
Now, you've got another project called Open Sesame to Open Doors. What's that all about?
Oh, yes. So this is actually my PhD student, Mike Karleski. So we have a lab door that uses these key cards in your wallet, and he suggested that we ought to try using something like the Kinect to just let people gesture to open the door. And he's interested in the fact that that could be more playful, more interesting, maybe even more social. You can imagine somebody, I guess he was inspired by Alibaba and the 40 Thieves, right? Magically opening the cave that, in a way, instead of having this boring card, it gives you a certain kind of superpower to gesture and hear the door unlock.
One of the things that I really enjoy about your work is this idea of understanding that technology seemingly has fit us into certain motions that make us almost as robotic as the films that we watched about robots in 2001, instead actually designing things to move more like humans and then operate the technology that way. It's a very elegant idea, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's actually a really funny story of this artist, David Rokeby, who created this very nervous system. And the system ended up training him to move in really strange ways because he was trying to get it to recognize him. But I think at this point, we have sensors that can recognize almost anything we do. We just haven't caught up to designing interactions with them to take advantage of that.
So you think that you can make designs that will allow people to dance to open up a door, to wave their hands to open up a door? I assume that there's side benefits to this as well. It's not just that it's cool. It's also that, I suppose, the more you move like a human, the more you're moving like a human. That's a good thing for us.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there is research, too, that if you move in a joyful way, you start to feel joyful. I think also we pick up little cues from how people move, and we're going to try to leverage that with Open Sesame. So a person could have more than one gesture. If they're grouchy, they could do their grouchy door opening gesture, and everybody in the lab knows, oh, okay, so Mike's a little grouchy today. I don't think I'll bother him. So
picking up cues from how others are, one of the things that you've talked about is this idea that if you spend enough time with someone, you end up picking up their same social cues. And that's something that's obviously we know it's happening, but we probably don't pay that much attention to it. You can actually use that to develop technology to, I don't know, treat us a little differently if we're using certain motions all the time.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that's one of the beauties of face-to-face interaction is that we're social creatures and we do have this contagion with one another. And we designed a game that lets you create dance moves with other people and mirror their movement. And it's been incredibly fun and successful on the indie game scene, I think, because of that phenomenon, because imitation is fun.
I also like the idea that you don't have to be a good dancer.
No, that's right. Yeah. I mean, we have some great footage. There was this festival in LA, and we had everything from a woman who'd won some dance contest on television to a mom and her 8-year-old who just finished a soccer game, and everybody was doing well.
Yeah. Catherine Isbister joins us, and we're talking about games and how they can make us, you know, work better together, feel good. That sounds like a good idea. You can join us at 844-724-8255. Lara's calling from Spartanburg, Carolina. Hi there, Lara. Go ahead.
This is Laura from Spartanburg, South Carolina, and I had a question about putting the technology in place in rural schools or in schools in poor districts that have gotten the money or the initiative through the president's technology plan that was talked about a lot yesterday. Mm-hmm. But like our local schools, recently all the kids have iPads and iPods and, I mean, iPads and personal computers now by Apple. Is there a way to somehow link them in with the gaming in these areas to help their education also? I have a son that graduated from NYU 2 years ago with a gaming degree, so I really support the gaming industry a lot, the social game.
Mm. Yeah, no, I think there is. I mean, the dance game I mentioned is actually an iOS-based game, and we're putting it on the App Store for free because we're a research lab. But absolutely, I mean, I think a lot when I'm building these prototypes about using current consumer technology so that the things we build can go all the way out into the world. Another example is we're working on a game for math anxiety that uses the Kinect platform, which is actually a lot cheaper than buying yourself a PC.
So. I think this is really fascinating. Math anxiety is one of the things that keeps so many kids from just even liking math. And you're trying to figure out a way to make math actually literally more physically fun to do.
Yes. Well, so there's this amazing research that shows if you take up a lot of space physically, not only do you feel more confident, but your biochemistry changes. Your testosterone goes up, your cortisol goes down. So we're actually working with one of the people who did that original research to make a game that puts kids in these power poses to get them primed so that they feel confident and excited and not scared at all. In the hopes that then when they have to take a math test or when they're doing their homework, they'll feel better and they'll actually perform better.
I want to go to Roger in Minneapolis. Hi there, Roger. Go ahead. You're on Science Friday.
Hi. My question slash comment goes to the atomization of human interaction that we see with people running around looking at screens. Even the use of technology to gather information, say, on a public square or whatever, and then have people be able to glean from it something about ways that they might interact with each other, seems like a strange way to approach the idea that people can get away from their screens and learn to pick up the cues of being around each other. And even venturing to say hello and re-engage in social interaction on the level of the public square. I don't see the use. I'm sorry.
Hmm. Well, I think maybe what Roger's getting at is this idea of, look, for years, you know, in the public square, we just, you know, went over to our neighbor and said hello. We didn't need a game to get us to all play together. What do you think?
I think that is absolutely true. I think that we are, as you know, monkeys who love tools, we like to augment what we do. So I'm not advocating that, you know, we can't interact without technology, but I think we haven't gotten nearly creative enough with using tech to artfully augment what we do. And I think you're right. There's still an over-reliance on screens, and we're like moths to flame with screens. I think that we have to think about other ways of giving feedback and ways, you know, if you think about something like fashion, think about how you choose the t-shirt you put on in the morning. That is a social signal, and people look at you and they decide if they're going to interact with you or not, a little bit based on what you're wearing, you know, a little bit based on your expression. So we can augment those kinds of things in artful ways to actually help people who might want to connect. Right?
When you talk about augmenting yourselves, and one of the things we've heard so much about in the last few years is Google Glass. What do you think about that technology?
Well, I think that Google Glass tends to put a barrier between the person and their environment. I think it's really designed to give an information overlay for that person onto the world. I don't think it's really designed from the bottom up to encourage people to connect. So I would say it's useful for giving that one person some feedback and extra information, but I think it's actually off-putting to others often because they can't tell if they're being filmed or not. They don't quite know what's going on.
Now, I know that one of the things that you've worked on is actually augmentation for people who are game players. You know, if you want to dress up as a comic book character, maybe you can wear a costume that will help you within that game. That seems to a certain extent to be a little bit off-putting to the general public if you're walking around, I don't know, with a toy sword or something. But maybe you could explain a little
bit
better to me.
Yeah, so I got involved in this project through the iBeam Arts Organization. We have an artist in residence in my lab, and she has a background in fashion. And her idea is that you can create game controllers that are really worn on the body and that have cool costuming elements to them, not unlike what you would see in superheroes. The idea isn't that you just wear this walking down the street. The idea is that you would do this with your friends, maybe in a living room, maybe in an arcade setting, but that it would allow you to have a more exciting experience and also much more interesting for the audience, much more fun to watch than just staring at a screen, watching people perform and act out these gameplay movements with their whole bodies.
I guess I was taking it to the next extreme. As you talk about these public games that you are trying to make available, maybe that is a next step in which people are walking around. They're both in real life and they're also in a game at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, that's the trickiest thing about game design is how and when you create the magic circle. You know, you could contrast casual games with games that require a lot of focus. So I think one of the tricky things is going to be how do you pop up that game experience? Where are the boundaries? How do you make people feel safe who play, but also not, you know, completely alienate passersby who want nothing to do with it? Right?
Yeah, alienate passersby. It's sort of like the Google Glass. I mean,
yes.
Whenever you see somebody with that, there is that little bit of a barrier there. That's an interesting idea. I want to get to a quick phone call. Amy's in Jacksonville, Florida. Hi there, Amy. Go ahead.
Hey, how are you doing?
Doing well. What's on your mind?
On my mind, there's a couple of different things. I've been riddled with neurological problems my entire life. I have had Asperger's and ADHD, along with four different learning disabilities, post-traumatic stress disorder of the complex type.
Yes.
And now I have multiple sclerosis, and it's creating its own social anxiety. And because I have what's called PBA, or pseudobulbar effect, which creates emotional lability, my self-esteem has hit the gutter. And I'm wondering if games like this could maybe help people like me, not just on a medical level, but on a psychosocial level as well, with maybe helping with human interactions.
Well, first of all, it's a great question, Amy, and I just want to tell our listeners that this is Science Friday from PRI Public Radio International, and we're talking with Catherine Isbister. What do you think about Amy's question?
You know, I think that there has been a lot of work on how people who may struggle with in-person social interaction have found wonderful connections in, particularly in massively multiplayer online games. So I think the work of Sherry Turkle about identity and network gaming, and that can really be a nice bridge to kind of forge connections that then may lead to in-person friendships and even beyond. And there are stories of people getting married after playing these games for years from different continents. Mm-hmm. So
I know you've been working with a doctor who rehabilitates stroke victims.
Yeah.
Talk about that collaboration, if you would.
That's been really great. That's actually, rehabilitation specialists, bioengineering specialists, all kinds of people on this project. And the idea is that when you've had a stroke, you can't control your grip strength very well. You either clutch your cup and crush it, or it falls out of your hand. But you can retrain this. The problem is it's really boring. You have to practice over and over and over and over again. So we've been working with this group to create a set of sensors on an object so that people can practice lifting things and getting their grip just right. And then we've created visualizations. The first one we did was a spinach can like Popeye. So instead of when you crush it, you feeling hopeless, you kind of laugh at yourself. You're like, oh, whoops, I guess I'm super strong again. Maybe I got to back off. So.
It gets back to this idea that if done right, this sort of technology can make us just feel better about ourselves, laugh at a time when we might be under stress. Do you think that too many people who are in the world of technology are thinking about other problems and not just thinking about, you know, the simplest one, make me feel better, make my life better somehow?
Yes. I think traditionally computers were more the domain of people who were engineers, really rationally minded, who maybe wanted to maybe even escape that world of subtle social signals. But I think we're way beyond that time. This stuff has infused everyone's daily life. And it's very important to consider that as a fundamental value in engineering. And I see that as my mission as a professor, is to get all these engineers who come through the doors of my lab to realize those are core values they should care about.
And do you feel like you're part of a movement? There's a lot more of you out there?
Absolutely. In fact, I think that's part of why the tech industry is starting to move back into New York, because New York has always been a place with interesting media and a lot of social savvy. And so I think it's only going to get better.
We got to break in just a moment, but what's the next big thing for you?
Oh, gosh, that's a good question. I don't know. Ask me in a year.
It seems like there's always something going on. I'm so glad that you're able to come back and talk with us a bit more about some of these ideas. A few people have asked if they want to see this exhibit in New Jersey. Where is it again?
Oh, it's at the Liberty Science Center, which is in the Liberty Park over there. And actually, we're going to have it, if you're going to be in Berlin in May, we're going to do it at the Night of Science in Berlin.
The Night of Science sounds like something that Science Friday folks might just go to.
Yes, you guys should really go.
Catherine Isbister is a research director at the Game Innovation Lab at New York University in Brooklyn. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.